This is KLOILP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9 FM. And this is Carol Steckler in the studio today with Lisa Shelby, who's the principal at the Lopez School, K through 12 principal at the Lopez School. And we have a new segment on both. This program will also be archived, but we have a new segment, and we hope to hear from some of the new teachers and other administrators, and it's called News from the School. So we will be interviewing various people, and Lisa has recently sent out a letter to the parents in the community. It's also on Lopez Rocks if you're interested in looking at it. And I got very interested in knowing more when I saw that letter. So good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Carol.
Thanks for coming. I know you have a really busy schedule. So I'm going to just ask a little bit of background information. You know, when when I hear you introduced, I hear you introduced as the person who came from the banks of the Yukon. Tell me about where you came from.
Well, most recently, before moving to Lopez, I was a high school boarding school principal in Galena, Alaska, which is right on the banks of the Yukon River. It's a remote village, fly-in only, about an hour west of Fairbanks.
Wow, you were so literally on the banks of the Yukon.
I was literally on the banks of the Yukon River.
Yeah. Yes. How long were you there?
I was with the Galena City School District for 6 years.
Oh, so that's a long time, Lisa.
Yes.
So you had a son born while you were there?
Or? Actually, we were in Alaska for 13 years.
Oh.
And so we spent, during that 13 years, we spent 3 years in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, in the middle of that, and that's where he was born.
Oh, so that's great. We'll have to talk about that, too. That's part of my old place. So you came to Lopez, interviewed for the job, and when did you start here?
In July of 2011, so the 11-12 school year would be my first year.
And was Bill Evans already the superintendent then, or were you both on board at roughly the same time?
He was not the superintendent when I was hired.
Yes.
Linda Martin was the superintendent who hired me, and then he came on after she left at the end of that
school year.
That school year.
So you were here a whole full school year.
Well, no, he came on at the same time I did.
Oh, okay.
But I was hired that spring through Linda Martin, but she just finished out the school year.
I see what happened.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I didn't ever have that straight in my mind. So I also hear stories occasionally that during your interview process, we're going to jump right into the news from the school part, and we're going to start with just finding out what's going on here and what's been Lisa's role in all this, because I do want you to talk about some of the things you've actually initiated in the school, and maybe some of the experience and ideas that are behind it, which I'm sure you will. So, but I also hear it often when people speak about your interview process that one of your questions was, "What's up with this math?" Do you remember that question? Asking that question?
Yes, I remember, and I just had the information off the website, but taking a look at math scores, and
sure,
it looks like, I mean, and that's nothing unique to Lopez. Across our nation, math scores are low.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just questioning, what are we doing here
exactly,
to combat those scores?
Do you remember what the answer was?
No.
I've never
to be
heard
honest
the
with
answer.
You.
Yeah.
I don't
I'm going to have to ask.
It was kind of a whirlwind day.
Well, so we'll kind of jump into the middle of it here. And so I'm going to ask you, so what's up with the math scores now?
Well, we're on the rise, but several things have changed since I got here. And I also want to clarify that while I may have the ideas, it's the teachers who do all of the work.
Got it. I'm guessing, knowing you, that you take whatever input kind of strengthens where you're headed.
Yes. And sometimes we totally change directions based on that input, too.
Yeah.
But so when I first got here, we had, I'll speak to the middle school specifically, there were non-math certificated teachers, if you will. I mean, we had certificated teachers, but their specialty was not math,
right,
who were teaching math in the middle school, three different teachers. And so that was one shift that we tried to move away from, was to get a math teacher who could go in depth about math teaching our middle school students. So we're still seeing some of the results from that, of just kids who didn't get quite the depth that they needed. And then in the elementary, we also shifted at the end of my, you know, starting my second year into kind of an expert teacher model, really wanting to give equal time to math and science. So we went to one teacher teaching literacy, one teacher teaching science and social studies, and one teacher teaching math. So,
and what did expert teacher, is that what did, is that the phrase you use?
That's the model. I mean, we were doing this at my previous school as well, and it allows the teacher to be able to just focus on the one subject so they can get more in depth. It allows them to see the same kids year after year, so you gain a lot of time in the beginning of the year. They were able to hit the ground running on day three this year, you know, with right into assignments, because they knew right where the kids needed to be for learning. They knew routines, knew each other, so it gained some instructional time.
Well, you know, I my oldest child went all the way through Lopez School. She's 50 years old now, so it was a long time ago. But math in the high school and junior high, because they were all together at that time, of course, was one of the most, what shall I say, my daughter loved math, and it shocked me, and that was because Larry O'Brien was the math teacher. So there's a deeply rooted, a deeply rooted tradition. Of course, it wasn't called that, of expert teaching at that time, because he loved math. And part of it is the passion behind what you're doing.
It's a huge piece of it, yeah, is teachers having the passion behind what they're doing.
Right. Yes. And so, this kind of goes along, because I've, of course, heard you speak and read the letter. And now, is there a curriculum that goes all the way from... is it third grade through high school?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Well, there's not a curriculum per se, but right now there's a new mandate from the state that we are moving to the national standards, the Common Core standards.
Common Core, that's the word.
And the Common Core standards actually run, they have domains, is what they call them now, that actually run from kindergarten all the way to, through 12th grade. There's a geometry domain, there's an algebra domain, and they run the whole gamut. So each year it just gets a little bit more complex. And so we are, the students will take an assessment in the spring of 2015. So that
this will be the first baseline, is that correct?
Based on Common Core standards. So we're in the second year of implementation, and each year we are tightening that up just a little bit more, and implementing these new standards.
So. Okay, so that seems a really fair way. I mean, I don't know the program well enough, but are you excited about it, or are you just willing to work with it, or what's
We're pretty excited, actually. The new Common Core standards, really, they take things a little bit more in-depth, especially with math, and they add more nonfiction reading. So it really creates more of a balance for more nonfiction reading in all core areas and all core subjects, and takes math to a little bit more of a processing level rather than just rote mathematics. So that's really exciting for application, real-life application, and crossover with subjects into science and technology.
Well, I now when I hear you talk about it, I get excited about it. I'll do another really short story. So I was in a overhearing, listening to a conversation between some professors at the university who were teaching graduate studies in some subject of math, and they were having a conversation, which I now understand was about higher math. I multiply and add on my fingers, but I understood what they were talking about. I couldn't repeat it, I couldn't teach it, but in the moment I was fascinated. So I'm excited that these kids are going to get some of the theory and some of that excitement. I mean, I don't even like math. And I was excited about how huge the imagination, not even the imagination, but the information and theory about mathematics is.
One of the biggest shifts is having students, they have to explain how they got the answer, both verbally and in writing. So that's a big shift of, that's now, you know, required, and something that we're focusing on in our instruction is, you know, having them not only, I mean, yes, we still are focusing on basic math facts. I mean, we have to have that automaticity with multiplication facts, addition facts, and subtraction facts as they move upwards. Once they reach division, they have to have the multiplication facts under their belt. So we've dialed that up just a little bit to make sure that we are holding kids accountable for knowing them, but then also being able to explain how they're getting the answers and thinking through the math. yeah. not just the rote.
Well, it's exciting
facts.
To me to hear about this. Now, what's the rest of the other subjects in the core curriculum?
Literacy, which is reading and writing. And like I said, there's more emphasis on nonfiction. So that's a big increase. It caused us to really take a look across, you know, cross grade levels. For example, in elementary, we're doing our nonfiction reading through the science and social studies in conjunction then with our fiction reading in the literacy classroom. And same thing as you move upwards, choosing some more nonfiction readings and making sure that's happening through the social studies departments and science departments as well in the secondary.
So, not to put you on the spot, but what would be some of the nonfiction books that maybe a student in high school might read? Do you?
Well, I think it depends on the subject area and
let's
the
say
unit
social
that they're
studies.
Studying. They, you are putting me on the spot.
I'm
nonfiction
sorry.
Books. That they're reading.
I didn't think of. I'm just following my own interest here.
That's okay. So they are, you know, we have textbooks
yeah.
that they are using, but that's just one source because
yeah.
we really want to make sure that we are creating critical thinkers. So we
yeah,
don't want them
exactly.
just learning out of one, from one publisher's point of view or from one source's point of view. So
yeah.
there's the newest, latest, and greatest is called Open Educational Resources, OERs. And these are online textbooks, if you will, but they're some of them are free and some of them are not free. You have to, with the free ones, you have to be careful that it's actually accurate information, but
yeah.
lots of great information out there that you can access. And then we also use primary source documents because you can find those online now. And so that's what they're using in social studies. And
well, that's
nonfiction.
That brings us to something that didn't just surface right now, but it's been a question some citizens have asked about why there aren't textbooks for everybody. And I picked up on that keyword critical thinking, and I know I've heard you give this answer before, but it's an exciting answer to me.
Yes.
So
and
how does that relate? Tell me what's happening.
Well, when I arrived there, we actually did have some textbook shortages where we didn't have enough textbooks in certain classrooms for every student to have one. So we corrected that issue.
Did that have to do with an increased enrollment?
To some extent, it did have to do with increased enrollment, yes. And to other extents, it just had to do with our scheduling and how many students we have as they move through.
Mm-hmm.
But we did correct that issue.
Yeah.
But we are not yet adopting new textbooks. We do need to update in some certain areas, but right now it would not be fiscally responsible for us to do so because textbook adoptions are incredibly expensive, thousands
yeah.
of dollars. And right now with the new shift to Common Core standards, all the publishers out there are busy rewriting textbooks
yeah.
to get everything up to date and ready for Common Core standards.
Mm-hmm.
And that work will not be complete until 2015 when the students take those first assessments, because everyone then will work backwards
right.
from that. So we're not buying new curriculum at this time, but we
right.
did make sure everyone had enough textbooks for those teachers who are using textbooks in the classroom as a resource.
So,
but we are not teaching solely from textbooks. No, we don't encourage that.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Let's repeat that, I guess. And you don't encourage it, from what I hear you saying, because you're developing critical thinkers. Talk about that a little more.
Yes. Well, I mean, textbooks, you know, it's a money-making business. You know, I mean, there's many, many, many publishers out there. And depending on what publisher you're choosing or where they're from or where they're writing from, it's a certain point of view. And so we want to make sure that students are not, we want them, you know, questioning, you know,
mm-hmm.
is that the right information? What can you compare or contrast that to? And looking at as many sources out there for information as they can around certain subjects. It's getting them prepared as they move through high school to move on to college where they have a research project and you have to cite many, many sources. And so we're just getting them ready and prepared for that. And we're starting from the beginning.
That is so exciting to me. I mean, I grew up in another generation and I didn't have one question no one ever asked me to compare and contrast anything till I was a freshman in college.
Right.
And that was new territory, although I got excited by it. It was actually the first time I even got an A on a
right.
paper in college.
Yes. Well, and now too,
I got to think about something.
paper textbooks are also, I mean, they're a little antiquated. It's almost, you know, especially
yeah.
with
yep.
Science and social studies, it's kind of like buying
gosh.
A used car for thousands and thousands of dollars, and then a year later, the information is no longer accurate. So now most schools are moving to digital formats
yep.
for textbooks in middle school and high school because they can be updated automatically it's more bang for your buck. It's more fiscally responsible. So as we move forward, once Common Core comes in, then those will be the next discussions and decisions will be digital textbooks for
and that
secondary.
Means computers and digital or whatever.
The technology.
Online
tools.
Online learning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, not necessarily online learning. I mean, that's the curriculum
thing.
Won't necessarily be online, but the textbooks will be digital.
Okay.
Kind of like if you have a Kindle, a digital book, that sort of thing.
Like
that's
that.
How you access.
Yeah.
But then the online textbooks now have videos that are embedded, you know, so you don't just get the 1D picture on the page.
Yeah.
It's actually a video for you to watch that's embedded in the text.
Wow,
it's pretty fancy.
Yeah, that's pretty. And is it interactive in any way?
Some of them are.
Yeah.
It depends, yes.
Yeah,
it
yeah
depends,
I can imagine
absolutely.
That. Well, that's just an exciting new world that makes sense. I mean, I think a week doesn't go by when there's some major new information exposed. What can I think of? The most recent one was the skull that they're. I've heard on the news this week where they're rethinking about how the very beginning of humanity. And, I mean, that just surfaced this week.
Mm-hmm.
And good heavens. I mean, and it's one of the more, I didn't follow it a lot, but it does seem to be one of the more essential new learnings about our own history.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that's just an example of,
education
of why I get excited about this.
Education's changing.
Yeah, it is. And I can't think of anything more important than to have our students go out into the world and even through their school years to be critical thinkers. Because you're going to get kids with good ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great ideas.
They do. And it creates a climate of innovation and excitement
mm-hmm.
where everybody gets kind of to build on each other's both imagination and perception. Well, I'm very excited to hear about this part of what's happening there. It's called Core Curriculum.
Common Core Curriculum. Well, it's Common Core Standards. It's not
Common Core Standards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, this seems like a really important thing for people if you're interested in more. Let's see. Go online and read the rest of Lisa's letter and we'll follow this on KLOI and other venues. So there's some other subjects that are frequently not in the news because we don't have news. All we have is a grapevine, and it beats strongly in all directions. So bullying has been mm-hmm. on the school, the community's radar and the school's radar. I know that because of letters both you and Bill wrote a year ago or so in the paper. So tell me kind of, if you can, what's the story there?
Well, the story there is that we have humans in our school, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, do we have bullying? Yes, we do. And is it a problem? Yes, it is, because it's not okay to treat anybody unkindly in the school. But we have humans. And, you know, we every day, the teachers, the administrators, all of us we combat bullying. And it's basically students come to school and they are bringing what they see on television and they're bringing what they're seeing in digital media. They're bringing what they're hearing out there in the world mm-hmm. and in society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, society, there's war, there's, you know, certain they're just bringing all of that with
everything,
you know, every day. So it's a society issue. It's a community issue. It's definitely a school issue. It's a family issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, until we get rid of, you know, violence, domestic violence. And, you know, I could get on a soapbox here, but I won't. But, you know, we every single day we have to help grow kind people. And that requires having conversations with students, you know, and it starts in kindergarten for how to share, you know, and how to express our feelings without being physical. You know, I mean, that's what preschool teachers and kindergarten teachers do, is teach kids how to articulate, I'm frustrated or I'm angry or, you know, you are not nice to me without being physical. And then it just kind of moves up from there. And, you know, then it becomes where words can be hurtful. And so we have conversations with kids, you know, how to be empathetic, how to see things from other people's point of view. And, you know, as adults, we do this all the time, you know, as well as in a community. I mean, we have to learn how to get along with each other when we all have differences of opinions and philosophies. And, you know, which is fantastic. You know, we want that in our society, but we have to learn how to work with each other to do that respectfully. So,
yeah, you know, it occurs to me, I mean, we're talking about academic competency when we talk about what's happening with that part of the school experience, but now you're talking about emotional competency.
And social
competency. And social competency. And most behaviorists and psychologists will say that the most productive way students, or anyone, you and I too, learn is with positive role models and not discipline. Mm-hmm. Although I'm sure there have been and will
there
be.
There has to be a balance. Yes, we have to hold kids
exactly. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of the difference when you're teaching, not saying what not to do or saying don't do that, but modeling and pointing out in very
right.
positive ways
right.
what's working.
Yes, and we're not perfect, you know, yeah. and the kids aren't perfect.
And the teachers aren't perfect.
None
Human
of us
beings
are not perfect.
I actually can tell you ways I've been a bully in the last 2 days. I mean, really, if anyone is honest, unless they haven't been in an interaction with human beings, I not that I'm proud of that. I mean, it's just something I'm still working on. I'm 72 years old, mm-hmm. and I have a lot of empathy and kindness, and I those are some of the values I try to live. And I still yell. Mm-hmm. I do.
Yes.
So I just want to, again, I loved your response about humanizing. And the other part about issues that happen with students, let's say, this is confidential. I have no right nor interest in knowing who's doing what to who at the school, and you have a legal authority to protect people, students and families. Is that not correct?
That is correct. I mean, when we have a situation at school between students, that is at the level of harassment or bullying, we have talked to those parents yeah. of the students who are
and there's discipline
involved. Yes,
say.
And we follow the student handbook, mm-hmm. you know, and we try to do that as consistently and as fairly as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, if someone from the community, and this has happened, where they want to know, well, what were the consequences and what happened? And it's, unfortunately, it's really not anyone's business except for those kids and those parents. And that's really hard because we're a small island and we all care about each other and we want to know what's happening to our neighbors and our
friends.
And
we all hear stories.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yes, there's the fast track rumor mill and there's yeah. that too. But it's really, you know, our obligation and responsibility is to those kids. And yeah. they make mistakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, our big piece and what I often tell kids is, you made a mistake, but please don't ever make the same mistake again. You may make another one because you're human, but don't make the same one again.
Yeah.
So that's
and
that's
maybe again. I mean, like I do, but hopefully. I really love how you speak of this with the values that you speak of hoping to inculcate. Even the language you use expresses that, the empathy and compassion and understanding of the human condition, so to speak, or human nature, whichever language resonates with people. And this is very separate, but the confidentiality part and it is similar, because another thread of conversation on Lopez is why do people leave the Lopez school?
So people either choose not to come to Lopez school or they leave Lopez school for many, many reasons. And I think I'll start with that before the district that I worked for 6 years, I was a principal for the last two of those 6 years with Galena City School District at a boarding school. But before that, I spent 4 years working with homeschool support in a homeschool support program for the same school district, public school district, with over 4,000 students in it. And so I continued some of that work even as a principal. We brought them out to do aviation and culinary into the boarding school as well.
Yeah.
So, and then my husband and I were also on a nonprofit board, and we actually did international travel with homeschooled students as well. So I've spent a big portion of my professional career with working with families who exercise their right for school choice. And so that being said, we have families who are choosing not to come to Lopez School for religious reasons or for personal philosophy reasons, for reasons that are very personal to them and to their family. Some just want to spend more time with their kids because they can, and
yeah.
that's fantastic. And then we also have families who have left Lopez School for whatever reason. It wasn't working for their child at that particular time. And, you know, public school can be like that sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Any school can.
Any school
Private
can.
Schools, absolutely. Religious schools. People absolutely. Want something that they don't have.
Yes.
And they're looking for something different.
And on Lopez, I mean, you know, if you were on the mainland, there would be a Montessori school down or the street or a Waldorf school or a religious school or, you know, an option school or charter school, depending on where you live. We're just Lopez School. And so we try our very best to meet the needs of everyone and every child. But sometimes, you know, parents and or children at a certain developmental level, we're not the right spot for them for whatever reason.
Right.
And it's very personal. And so, you know, there are some families who have been frustrated in especially my first year and then the second year with some of the academic pieces that we are working on, improving how we are doing our instruction. And so we heard those voices. We're looking at our data, and we are working hard to improve and make sure that students are getting what they need out of our school. So.
Well, and some of the, and we'll get back to this toward the end of the program, but some of the feedback that we're getting from the larger community and world is saying that we are improving. I mean, as we rise in our, the recognition of, and I want to make sure we get to that. But I do want to talk a little bit more about the controversy, not controversy, that's not the right word. It's all perception.
Yes.
And sometimes out of perception, we kind of mix it up.
Yes.
But really, it's all about perception, and the perception that if we lose any students from Lopez, that's a failing of the school. And while we have, I don't even know how many, and that was... So when someone homeschools, my understanding is they have an obligation to let the school know they're doing that. Is that correct?
Well, there's several different layers.
That's what I want to know.
Yes, and so... A family can choose to just homeschool on their own without any support from a public school.
Yeah.
And so, yes, they are supposed to let us know and sign a declaration that they are choosing to do that.
But if they don't do that, you don't have an obligation to contact them at all?
Well, yes, we do have an obligation to contact them. Now, that's where it gets really complicated.
Yeah, I understand.
Because larger districts, they are sending out truancy officers if they haven't. If we know of a student, if they know of a student in the community that did not sign the declaration of intent to homeschool, then it's essentially they're truant. So larger school districts send out a truancy officer. We're choosing not to do that.
Yeah.
We want to honor and respect those parents' choices. But yes, they should be filling out a declaration of intent to homeschool.
And they're requested to do so.
And they are requested
and
to do so.
And again... Different families have different ways of being in the world, and there will be some that choose not even to respond to that.
Yes, because one of the reasons that they're homeschooling is they don't want any government oversight.
Right,
and
so they don't want their name on anything.
There are a few families out there like that.
No, I get it.
And then, you know, and we want to respect those choices. And then there are also those families who choose to join our Parent Partner Program, which is a support program where we have a certificated teacher that can... You know, we help them with curriculum and what's best for your child and how they learn. It's also checks and balances and support for instructional strategies, et cetera. And so, you know, that's a different layer of support. And then we also have online learning. We've partnered with Columbia Virtual Academy. And through that is another way that students can learn and do online work. And then it's also been a way for the Lopez District to make some money because we support students who don't live on Lopez through virtual learning with our partnership through Columbia Virtual Academy, and that's how we've been able to add some technology and career and technical pieces to our program here for Island students. Is
so in that way, those students really increase the potential or the whole curriculum that's available for all the students on
campus. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's another way we can support students just out there in Washington State, and it's also a bonus for our Island students. So.
And the same as in, when we were talking about bullying, totally different subject, but you have the same legal obligations about confidentiality. Is that correct?
For homeschool families?
They leave, I mean... That's,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Those are conversations between myself and the parent.
Yep.
And, you know, they're about students. So, of course, yes, those would be confidential.
Those are very confidential.
Because they're personal. So.
I'm dwelling on this because I know from, I had four kids in school all the way through college. And so I've been a part of schools in lots of different ways in my life. And I know that there sometimes issues of transparency are spoken of when confidentiality kind of you can't. There are things that can't be made transparent,
right?
And so there's a line between from the school. I mean, you have a I was a social worker. I had legal obligations that I could not be transparent with our funding sources or anybody about specific events. I could be talk about general, but I couldn't talk about specific people or names or anything like that. And I know you live with the same kind of criteria. And I think that's just an important aspect of the profession, of the administration and teaching profession, and actually everybody at the school are have similar guidelines about confidentiality and both state and in district and all different places. And just briefly, because a lot of our listeners know some of my kids as adults, and some of you had kids that grew up with my kids. When we first arrived on New Lopez, a brand new family, we had four kids in school, second grade through fifth grade. Two girls, two boys. Two boys, after a week of school, decided they weren't going to go back. And the two girls were okay. They were really social, and they were pretty happy there. And this was when it was illegal to homeschool. So I just let the boys come home. And they were out of school for about 6 months. And I required them to go back when I got a threatening letter from the school district saying that, you know, that we were breaking the law. And I showed them the letter and said, "Sorry, Charlie, you're going back to school." And they both ended up being very involved in the Lopez school. And one of them graduated there, another graduated from another high school. So I also had a daughter that was happy as a clam at Lopez until she was 16. I was on the school board, and she quit school. I was thrilled, not really at all. It was actually kind of a scary thing. It was not a family decision, let me put it that way. And but she, all on her very own, without even telling me, had a driver's license in and got in the car and got a GED at Skagit and enrolled in a community college and graduated from Southern Oregon State University with a degree in theater. So, you know, that wasn't even my family's choice, and it was a frightening time for me. But I just am saying that so listeners can know. I mean, even in just our small family, we had such a range of experiences, and I would put none of that at the foot of Lopez School. It was who my children were at the time and the choices they were making and what I could and couldn't support. And every family has both dilemmas and opportunities that lead them to make the choices they do. And I guess I could only echo what you were talking about earlier about empathy and compassion and respect for whatever choice any family makes. And it's more difficult, I think, when they're angry. That creates another whole dynamic with the school and the community. But even that, you know, they're doing the best they can with what they know at the time.
Yes. Well, and even the anger I can respect because it's their children. I mean, and, you know, when it's your child, you're passionate, and that's okay. But I think, you know, the biggest message for supporting the choice of families is just we want to honor and respect that. We want them to feel welcome into our school anytime. You know, we had one of our, a student we were supporting who doesn't even live on Lopez, who joined our parent partner program, actually went on the middle school trip to North Cascades last year. You know, we want discovery days, you know, they join us. And so we just really want to have that community school feel. And even if the school isn't working or it's your choice to teach your child at home and because of personal reasons, if there's something you want to access, we want to make sure that that's available for you to access if it's good for kids. So,
I love that phrase, community school experience. Write that down on the back page somewhere. I even like the idea of the word experience in there. It just seems so vital, and I just love it. Thanks, Lisa, for that phrase. So now I promise we're coming to the end of the broadcast. It'll be a little bit shorter of an hour because Lisa has an appointment at 2 o'clock and we're like 5 minutes away from the school. So I'm going to talk about some of the recognition that the school has gotten for these really innovative and well-planned and implemented changes. But what's the feedback on the test scores and what's happening?
Well, we did get a silver medal from the U.S. News and World Report for our high school, which is pretty exciting. I mean, there's very few small schools our size in Washington State, and we are right up there with U.S. News and World Report. So that's pretty exciting for us.
And that's new, isn't it?
That is new.
They've put that report out for a long time.
Yes.
And this is the first time we've been...
First time we've gotten a silver.
Silver, yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So... there's that piece, and then also just looking at, there's something called the Achievement Index, which you can access through OSPI, which is the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. I have to learn my acronyms. And over that, you can look at each year, and you can see our growth as we continue to grow in reading and in math across the board. And, you know, we hope to continue to see that growth as we've implemented these new shifts and changes. It's called TPEP, the Teacher Principal Evaluation Program, that's in place also that we're implementing for the first time this year, is really changing how principals and teachers are being evaluated. It's changing our conversations around instruction.
Wow, that's interesting. I hadn't heard about this. I know we're
getting close, yes.
Yeah. We do have a little bit more time. We have about 5 minutes. It's only, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's also a mandate from the state that we do this, so the whole state is doing this, and mm-hmm. we chose an instructional framework. So it's been powerful so far in just how we're having conversations around instruction as a staff, and how we're paying attention to our data as a staff for how our students are doing. And then, of course, we don't want to just pay attention to the data, because those are just little snapshots,
yeah.
although it is what our public image, so we have to pay attention to that. And it has a lot of merit for gauging how we're really doing. But we also have the luxury of being a small school and knowing our students very, very well, and knowing what they're capable of, and knowing where we can challenge them and how we can support them, and who they are as whole children. So we want to make sure we focus on all of that as well.
So does a student have a role in some of this evaluation, and is that through a written instrument, or how does that happen?
The student at this point doesn't have a role in the teacher evaluation from the state level.
Yeah.
However, you know, we are exploring ways to look at student surveys to give us some feedback, and so we will be taking a look at how we can use those instruments, because I think that's really powerful for us to hear straight from students, how are we doing?
Exactly, and also it helps them develop some critical thinking, because especially if they can see that. Well, that's another subject, but there's just so many ways those can be used, even as teaching tools about differences.
Absolutely.
Because you could have evaluations from 10 students of the same teacher, and they're all over everywhere.
Absolutely.
And without names or anything, I think it's possible for people to see, to understand how that happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, for many people, that's a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just very excited when I talk to you, Lisa. Is there anything else that you think we need to know about what's happening at the school now, besides that there's a soccer game that started already?
Yes, and a middle school volleyball game coming right up. So, I mean, I think, you know, it feels wonderful right now, and I've gotten that feedback from staff and from parents, and I think that's a good thing to put out there. They work really, really hard, and they put their hearts and their souls into spending this time with kids. I mean, this is what they are choosing to do, and they do it really well.
Yeah.
And are we perfect? Absolutely not. But we're always going to be working towards improving ourselves. And, you know, in working with human beings, we may never reach perfection, but we're always going to be striving for it. And we have a lot of new staff this year, and it's really exciting to see them.
Yeah, could you just tell us what their names and what their positions
are? Sure. So starting in the second year, we have Anthony Revente, and he's new from New York, and he's teaching secondary social studies. And he's also he's doing wood shop, and then he's going to do the construction trades, which we're really excited about that addition. We're going to be building storage sheds, if you will. The students will be building storage sheds, yes.
Great.
A great application of math, and then also a great application for framing and roofing and electricity.
Yeah.
And so we're excited about that, adding that to our career and technical education format. Also looking to add welding and bringing small engine work back.
Yes.
And in my previous school, we built, the way we applied those skills was we built wood splitters, and then we sold them to the community, and as we sell them, we use the money to then keep
That's a great
them.
Idea. Actually, we've had our car repaired in the past when they were running the school, mm-hmm. Small engine.
Yes. All we're lacking program. is we're just lacking sprinkler systems. So as soon as we can get that facility upgraded and get sprinkler systems in, we'll be able to get those classes implemented as well, which are, I mean, it's just great skills for all kids.
Absolutely.
And so anyway, that's Anthony. And then down in our elementary, we have Brian Goff, who's our new first and second grade teacher, coming to us from Tacoma. Mm-hmm. And we have Christina Barthelet, who's doing some sixth grade social studies, and she's supporting our alternative learning students, our Columbia Virtual Academy students. And with Catherine Kester, who's teaching middle school and high school math, and she's a nationally board certificated teacher. So we're pretty proud that we have two national board certificated teachers teaching math in the secondary.
Yes.
And then we also have a national board certificated teacher teaching English in the secondary. So for a school our size to have three national board certificated teachers is pretty phenomenal.
It is.
That's something to be proud of.
Absolutely.
So, and then we have Jamie Tirada, who's our new art teacher, K-12, and teaching art.
Uh-huh.
So Anthony, Christina, make sure I got them all. Jamie, Brian. Oh, and Dave. Dave Sather. Dave Sather is our new assistant principal and athletic director.
Oh, yeah.
And I split my role also, and I took on special services director. So we have two administrators, so I have a team, which is fantastic and will allow us to implement these mandates coming from the state and just have more efficiency and energy to move everything forward and keep improving the school. But we still just have one principal. We just split ourselves in half.
So it didn't change the fiscal picture for that.
No.
My life experience, which is, as I say, I'm 72, is that teams are so much more productive than individuals.
Yes.
I mean, it
much
just
more
is
so.
Great.
Yes.
It's just wonderful. So has there been a coffee or something that I... For the new teachers for
there
the
was at the beginning of the year.
I missed that one.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I'll still make it a point to meet some of these new teachers and it's so wonderful to hear and have this interview, Lisa. Thank you so much for taking time out. I feel so well informed whenever I speak to you or read what you write.
Oh, why? Thank you.
Thank you so much for what you're doing up there and your support for every person and parent and child that comes through your doors.
Well, thank you. They're all very special, and we enjoy every single one of them. So.
Yep, including yourself and all the rest of the administration and all the volunteers that work there too. Let's not forget about all those.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Including whoever's on the school board. They're always an important part of the school community.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to say good morning to you and let you jump off of here and go. Drive back to your appointment.
All right. Thank
Thanks
you so
again.
Much. Thanks a lot.
And this is Carol Steckler, and this is KLOILP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9 FM, and you've been listening to Lisa Shelby, the K-12 principal at Lopez School, and have a good day.